Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by BetDSI. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC on Fox 29 event, which takes place in Glendale, Arizona. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we had no premium bets for UFC 223, and we lost our one-unit free bet on the Rose Namajunas inside the distance prop. Back to the present, UFC on Fox 29 features a 14-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Big Network Fox this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the card on Fight Pass is a bantamweight contest between Luke Sanders, who is 11-2, and Patrick Williams, who is 8-5. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Luke Sanders opened -310, the comeback on Patrick Williams at +230. Now, all lines are courtesy of our sponsored sportsbook, betdsi.eu, so make sure you guys check BetDSI out and show them some love. So right now, looking across the board, it is currently at DSI -480 for Luke Sanders, and the comeback on Patrick Williams is at +360. So needless to say, more action coming in Sanders' way. The opener was a bit low. I know Sanders hasn't had all that much luck recently. I mean, if you look at him, he's coming into this fight off back-to-back losses. Sukhmin Tat knocked him out in a fight that he was doing relatively well. And then Alcantara before that in a fight that he was pretty much dominating, caught him in that leg lock. So in my opinion, bad luck, a little bit of just a lapse in focus for a minute, or IQ, you want to say, whatever the case may be. I mean, Sanders is way better than when that indicates, but he did have those moments, and unfortunately, they got him beat. I mean, that's the level of competition that you're seeing in the UFC. You cannot make a mistake, no matter if you're the more talented fighter, because obviously Luke Sanders was in those fights. He still lost them both. So it's unfortunate because we haven't really seen how good Luke Sanders can be thus far. I mean, again, he shouldn't be on a 2-fight losing streak, but he's probably going to bounce back here against Patrick Williams. Patrick Williams is a very dangerous opponent. Luke Sanders has to respect him. I mean, here's the thing with this fight. Obviously, we all know Patrick Williams has a good wrestling background. He's explosive. He's got some power, but his cardio is horrible. He's a one-round fighter. Again, he's going to be out for, I believe, almost a year since his last fight where, again, after a round, he did end up fading again, and Dukunois was able to dispose of him after that, so early in round two. So that's the thing. I mean, with Williams, he's dangerous. He's got that knockout power, that explosiveness that I'm talking about. He gets you in a guillotine choke, and he's got that wrestler's grip that you can be in some serious trouble if he gets around your neck. But if he doesn't catch you, he's going to be in trouble in his own right. And I think Sanders is going to put it on him. He just has to avoid getting caught by that big bomb or putting his neck in jeopardy. Outside of that, Sanders is going to outpoint him. Sanders is going to be the better striker in the feet. Sanders is going to be the better overall grappler, and he's going to put the pace on him. As soon as Williams slows down, Sanders is going to finish him. So to me, this is a no-brainer. I do agree with the early action. That -310 line was a bit low at open, even though you're seeing a -500 line or so right now. With Sanders, like I said, about 485, almost 500, I think it's right and it's justified because Williams needs to land something to win. Outside of that, Sanders is going to probably finish him. If it goes to the cards by some miracle, there's no question Sanders wins that way as well. So the pick is Luke Sanders. He should dominate in this fight.
And I'm completely with you. The biggest issue here is that Patrick Williams does present a finishing threat. And if Luke Sanders loses, it's going to be by finish. Sanders has all the tools in the world to beat just about any fighter on the bantamweight roster by decision. But if he gets caught on the chin like he did in his last fight, or if he gets caught with a submission like he did in the Alcantara fight, then he can lose. This guy definitely has to be the best fighter ever that started his UFC career 1-2. But That's just the way the cookies crumbled here for Luke Sanders. Patrick Williams does possess some power. I mean, he hurt Alejandro Perez and then finished him quickly. And Patrick Williams does have a pretty good guillotine choke. And I mean, even in his last fight, against Duquesne Waugh, I mean, he hurt him in the first round, but then when he started to slow down, Duquesne Waugh just destroyed him. So basically Luke Sanders, just as long as he's not over aggressive in the first round, then he should win. Cause once Williams starts to slow down, even though he started training at ATT, I mean, he still has the same issues. So if Sanders protects his chin, protects his neck, he wins. So Sanders is going to be my pick, and he probably wins by stoppage in the second or third round. Now, sticking with the bantamweight division, we have Matthew Lopez, who is 10-2, taking on Alejandro Perez, who is 26-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Perez open -150, Lopez +110. Right now, looking over BetDSI, it's currently -135 Lopez. The comeback on Perez +105. So line flipped, early action coming in Lopez's way. Not really that surprised. I think Lopez should be a very slight favorite, but this is close to a pick-up fight. So line where it's at now makes a lot of sense for me. It's another tough fight. I mean, in my opinion, Lopez is an outstanding grappler with some striking, with some power. He's just a grinder with skill. I mean, he's not a sloppy fighter either. He's got some technical skill to go along with it in all areas and all aspects of the game. But he is flawed a little bit. His conditioning at times will let him down. If he's in a really tough drag him out type of fight that goes back and forth and he has to get takedowns and he has to be relentless, that definitely will wear him out. Perez is probably one of the most improved fighters, I think, on the UFC roster. I mean, the people that he's been winning against lately, in my opinion, he's improved to the point where he can win those fights, because not too long ago, there's no way he would have won these fights. So it's the work that he's putting in. It's the confidence that he's building with getting wins over guys like Alcantara, with Sukman Todd. Morales fight was a very close draw decision, majority decision type of fight or whatnot that could have went either way. He's been facing really good competition that, again, not too long ago would have beat him, and he stepped up his game enough, and he's got so technically sound and confident and just solid in all areas that he can win these fights. So Lopez is going to be in for a battle here. Perez is going to want to keep this fight up on the feet, and if he does do that, he's going to want to pick Lopez apart and just kind of find his moments where Lopez does start to possibly gas out and start working those leg kicks. I mean, Perez has some nasty low kicks, and I think that could be a big weapon here in this fight against Lopez as well. But for Lopez, he wants to close that distance, maybe utilize, you know, obviously his wrestling advantage, get the fight to the ground, and try to just dominate the ground against Perez, which is not going to be easy. On the feet, Lopez does have some power in his hands as well, so Perez has to be careful there. So this is a back-and-forth fight for me. I mean, I could see it going either way because both fighters are definitely flawed, but at the same time, they're improving and they're kind of getting a little bit more confident and getting a little bit better as they progress their UFC careers. Now, Lopez, obviously, he's coming off of a disappointing performance. I mean, he ended up getting knocked out by Sun Cao after he had a really good knockout win over Eduardo. So it kind of leveled him out a little bit. I'm sure he's going to be a little bit more focused here. He's probably going to want to use a ground game and utilize his strength even more here instead of actually strike with Perez, I would assume. So I'm going to slightly go towards Lopez a little bit. I think that he can just grind out enough to probably get a narrow decision win. I think it's going to be very difficult for him to finish Perez, but I think he can get some takedowns along the way, put the pressure on Perez, and if his cardio holds, he should win on the scorecards as well, or even possibly get a finish on the ground. So I'm going to slightly lean towards Lopez in this fight.
And I'm going to go in the other way. I mean, Perez is a talented striker. He pushes a high pace on the feet, so he should outwork Lopez on the feet, and that kicking game should definitely come in handy here. I mean, he can slow Lopez down. And Perez is a bit underrated on the ground. I mean, he has some pretty good takedown defense. He actually will look for takedowns every once in a while as well. So I don't think Lopez is going to have a walk in the park trying to force this fight to the floor. And when Perez has been on the ground, I mean, he's shown a pretty solid submission defense, especially, you know, he went in there against that leg lock specialist and just kept effortlessly fending off those leg locks until he was able to, you know, pound out his opponent. So I think Perez is going to be in pretty good shape here. I mean, my biggest concern is, if Lopez gets top position on the ground and lands some ground and pound, because Perez's chin is probably his biggest liability. I mean, if he had a really good chin and a little bit better striking defense, then I think he would be a top 15 potential fighter. At this point, even without a good chin, I mean, he still went in there in his last fight and won a decision against Yuri Alcantara, which is extremely impressive. So Perez is definitely not a guy you want to sleep on. And Lopez, while he does have an elite ground game, he does not have elite conditioning, and he slows down in fights. We've seen it multiple times now. And I think my biggest concern with Lopez is, even if he starts strong in this fight and gets a takedown, if he expends too much energy, he could get himself in some trouble. I mean, Ronnie Hanayaya got a round three submission against him, and then Sun Tzu knocked him out in round three. So I could see this fight being close, and then maybe it coming down to round three, and Perez either wins a decision or maybe puts Lopez away. So I'm going to side with Perez. Now, moving all the way up to the heavyweight division, we have Arjun Singh Bular, who is 7-0, taking on Adam Wyserak, who is 9-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Bular opened minus 150, Wyserak at plus 110. Not a mistake. It opened minus 150, plus 110. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it is currently minus 370 for Bular. The comeback on Wyserak at plus 290. So those of you that hopped on Bular early on and got down what you wanted, good take. Because there's no doubt that minus 150 was a crazy, insane opener there. So again, limits were smaller. I'm sure you guys couldn't get down a ton, but that being said, still hats off to you because you scooped up some great value. Now it's sitting at minus 370, and that might even be low. So you guys know who I'm picking basically in this fight already. It's going to be Bular. You know, Wyserak is, he's an okay fighter. I mean, he's a little bit dangerous. He's definitely more of a submission type of fighter, has a little bit of power in the feet, but he's so slow. I don't know. I wasn't impressed at all against Anthony Hamilton. He was able to squeak by and get that decision. Hamilton did have him on his back. Hamilton had a lot of good moments in that fight as well. And if you can't get Hamilton out these days, whether you knock him out or submit him, I think you got issues here. And Wyserak wasn't able to do that. So Bular, in my opinion, he wasn't impressive in his debut either, but at least he fought a guy in Henrique that was, I think, more of a challenge. Henrique's really not that bad. He's actually a pretty solid heavyweight. So Bular had to be smart. You know, he got tested in that fight a little bit, and he passed it with flying colors. No doubt. There's no doubt about that. He kept a high pace on Henrique in that fight. He pushed forward, utilized his boxing, got some takedowns when he needed to. So obviously we all know Bular has that wrestling background, that elite wrestling background. He's still a work in progress. He's an elite wrestler, but developing his overall game. So he's still a little raw, but he does have smart IQ and okay boxing, like I said, with some power. So this is Bular's fight to win. I think he is not going to want to play around on the ground too much. If so, I think he gets top position and he's able to drop some ground and pound and then keep the fight upright whenever he wants. So in my opinion, Bular's going to be too fast for him. He's going to be landing a little bit. Will, I know he's going to have a little bit of discrepancy here as far as reach goes. Wyserak is a little bit taller, and he's going to have some pure reach as well, but I think Bular is going to make up for it by closing the distance and having his way with Wyserak. So to me, it's a no-brainer here. Even though neither guy really impressed me in their UFC debuts, I still think Bular's the side here, and he probably gets it done. So the pick is Bular to win.
Yeah, plain and simple, this fight should be a no-brainer. Bular is a talented wrestler, like an Olympic level wrestler, and Wyserak does not have good conditioning and does not have much power. So he just doesn't have much to threaten Bular with. I don't think he stops the takedowns. I don't think that he is able to hurt Bular if he does stop takedowns, which he's not going to. So I think this fight's going to be pretty one-sided. I expect Bular to get repeated takedowns, and then at some point, I think he finishes Wyserak. So I was not impressed with Wyserak's UFC debut, even though he got the win, and I think that he probably gets smashed here. So that's going to be my pick. Now, moving down to the welterweight division, we have Diego Lima, who is 14-6, taking on Yushin Okami, who is 34-11. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Okami -120, Lima -120. Exactly pick is where this fight opened. Not bad, all considering. I think that this is a tough fight, and right now over at DSI, it's actually still a pick. Line margins have tightened up a little bit. It's -115 either way. So, again, line was set appropriately here, I think. It's a tough one. I mean, who can you really have faith with these days, with Lima or Okami? Obviously, Lima's a younger fighter, but man, he's in MMA years, and you know, the chin on him has just been atrocious through the years. Now, I understand he's kind of leveled it out a little bit, and he's getting better in that aspect, meaning that he hasn't been purely knocked out for a few fights dating all the way back, I think, to Jason Jackson. And that was back in 2016. So it's been a couple years since he's been knocked out. But that being said, he's still susceptible to a very bad chin. So Okami has a little bit of power. I don't think he's going to be the one that to knock Lima out. I think Okami's path to victory here is actually grinding Lima out. Lima's takedown defense is definitely improving. It's getting better. But in the past, he has had issues with guys that could take him down. And if he's not able to submit you off his back or get back up, obviously he's going to lose the round. So I think that that's what Okami's game plan is going to be. He's always been a heck of a grinder. He's not really that bad on the feet either. But in this case, I think that these guys are so chinny in both aspects. I mean, Okami's 36 years old now, of course, so his chin isn't going to get any better. He's been through so many worse, you know, in his UFC run and then outside of the UFC as well. So he's been around for a long time. So, again, 36 years old, but an MMA year is way beyond that. And Lima, even though he's 28 years old with the punishment he's taken through the years as well, just can't trust either one of these guys right now. But I know the game plan that's going to be in place here, it's going to be Okami. He's going to want to clinch up, get this fight down to the ground, and I just think that he probably will have a little bit more success grinding Lima out and not getting submitted in this fight. So I'm going to slightly lean towards Okami, but it's not a confident pick. I could see it going either way.
And yeah, I can see this going either way. I mean, Okami clearly has more experience and he's had more high-profile fights, but he is a guy that's dropping down to the middle welterweight division, or has dropped down to the welterweight division, because he was, you know, looking a bit shot and worn out in the middleweight division. He wasn't having any success anymore. He got cut from the UFC as a middleweight. And he didn't really have much success outside the UFC as a middleweight. So what happens? He comes back to the UFC and fights at light heavyweight on short notice to help try to save an event that had lost its main event, one of its fights. So, I mean, he basically took his licking and now he's returning to the weight class that he wanted to be fighting at anyway. And against Diego Lima, I mean, this is the second time we've seen Lima as well, in terms of his second stint with the UFC. He had a pretty solid run on that comeback season of The Ultimate Fighter, making it to the finals. But yeah, I mean, he still has the same issues he's always had. I mean, he's a talented striker. He's a very talented grappler, but he just has one of the worst chins that you're going to have, especially for a young fighter. I mean, it just does not take much for Lima to get hurt. So, that's my biggest issue. I mean, Okami doesn't have a great durability either, especially over the years. His chin has gotten a lot worse, but, Okami has shown respectable boxing skills, and if he catches Lima on the chin, I think he could definitely knock him out. And Lima, while he does have a very good ground game, I mean, I don't know if he'll be able to tap out Okami. So while I think that Okami is on a decline, even Okami on a decline probably is able to utilize his wrestling and size here. And Lima's a big welterweight, but Okami was not a bad size middleweight. So Okami's actually very slightly bigger than Lima. And I think Okami does use that wrestling and gets top position and might hurt Lima with his boxing. And I think Okami probably grinds out a decision, if not gets a TKO along the way. So I'm slightly leaning Okami, but I mean, whoever really cracks the other on the chin hard first might win this fight. Now dropping down to the women's flyweight division, we have Shayna Dobson, who is 3-1, taking on Lauren Mueller, who is 4-0. Now, Nick, Where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Mueller open minus 190, the comeback on Dobson at plus 150. And right now, looking over at BetDSI, it is currently Mueller at minus 110 or minus 115, rather. I'm sorry. Mueller is minus 115. Dobson is a minus 115. So pick 'em. So the line dropped all the way down to a pick 'em fight. Not surprised. I mean, Dobson does get a lot of respect. Obviously, she has a good striking background. She's powerful. She's athletic. She's definitely improving since the Ultimate Fighter show. And you could see the potential that Dobson really has. If she can get that takedown defense in check, which she's been working hard at, and you know that she's getting better in that aspect, she's a heck of a striker. I mean, not only her boxing, she's actually developing a pretty good kicking game. So she's dangerous with her strikes, period, whether it's her hands or her feet. Dobson does have enough power, and, you know, we don't see a lot of females out there, typically speaking, that have a ton of knockout power, but Dobson is one of these girls you got to be careful about because she does possess knockout power. Now, Mueller, on the other hand, man, I'll tell you what, I was really impressed with her UFC debut, and that was at unofficially, I guess, her UFC debut because it was in the Dana White Contender Series. But that being said, I mean, Mueller came in, took that fight on short notice against a very solid opponent in Velasco, and she went in there, put the pressure on Velasco, grinded her out, outstruck her, got some takedowns. She just basically grinded her out. And again, it was the type of fight that she took on short notice, and she was the underdog going into that fight. And I think she was more than impressive. I mean, she's a complete package, and now she's actually dropping down to 125 pounds, and that was a bantamweight. So she's dropping down to flyweight. And with that pace and that pressure and that well-rounded skill set that Mueller does show, I think she's going to be a handful for a lot of these ladies at 125 pounds. So to me, the opening line at about a buck 90 or so, maybe is a tad bit high, but I still think that Mueller does have several advantages in his fight. So I'm going to go with her as well. I think that Dobson is definitely a dangerous fighter. Like I said, I have a ton of respect for her, and I'm sure she's only going to improve, but I think Mueller's pace is going to be a little bit too much for her. I think she's not going to hesitate to even look for the ground here because Dobson's weakness is definitely still on the ground, and Mueller can get some takedowns, get some ground and pound, maybe even look to finish by submission here as well. So she is the more well-rounded fighter. Even if she can't get some takedowns against Dobson, I think even though she's going to be at a little bit of a reach disadvantage, I think she's still going to be able to close that gap, and her pressure is going to get to Dobson as well. So I think Mueller can now point her on the feet. I think Mueller can win the ground battle here as well. So I think she's going to pretty much win this fight regardless of where the fight takes place. So I'm going to lean with her. I think she's going to probably win a competitive type of decision. If not, maybe even get a finish on the ground along the way. So the pick is Mueller for me.
And I agree. I mean, Shayna Dobson, I mean, she was the last pick on the flyweight season of The Ultimate Fighter, but you know what? So is Angela Hill, and Hill has actually turned around and had a decent UFC career. So Dobson could still become that, and she reminds me a little bit of Hill with the striking style, not having much of a ground game, having a little bit of pop in her hands. So she could definitely still find that groove. But Mueller seems like a much more polished product from her performance on the Tuesday Night Contender Series. I mean, even though she took that fight on short notice, she had just a tremendous pace, good activity rate. She throws nice combinations. She's dangerous in the clinch. I just really like Mueller. I mean, she has some good power. The only thing was she slowed down a little bit in the third round. But, I mean, even with that, you can't really blame her taking a fight on short notice and nearly finishing her opponent multiple times in the first two rounds. You know, that would slow down a lot of people. So, I think Mueller is just a little bit more seasoned. And as Nick mentioned, she might even want to take this fight to the floor. And if she does, Dobson definitely could be in trouble. So, you know, a lot of women's fights end up in the clinch, and Mueller is very good at landing knees in the clinch and just doing damage in the clinch. She has some pretty good dirty boxing. So, I think Dobson is really only dangerous when she's given a lot of space. And with the way Mueller fights, the way she presses forward aggressively and tries to force her opponent on the back foot, I don't think Dobson will have that much space. I think Mueller will be in her grill, and I can see Mueller winning a decision here most likely. But I mean, if it ends up going to the floor or in the clinch and Mueller does a lot of damage, then Mueller might be able to get a finish too. So my pick is also going to be Mueller. Now this brings us to the main event of the Fight Pass prelims. We have Gilbert Burns, who is 12-2, taking on UFC newcomer Dan Moret, who is 13-3, and this is in the lightweight division. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Burns opens minus 515, the comeback on Moret at plus 325. And right now, looking over at BetDSI, it is currently Burns at minus 625, the comeback on Moret plus 445. So even at 5-1, it still got bet up a little bit. People are throwing him in parlays as well. So stylistically, just a nightmare matchup for Moret. He is making his UFC debut. And let me tell you something. Moret's not bad at all. He's a really good fighter. I mean, you might look at the line and think, oh, this guy's a bum, because let's face it, Burns hasn't been the greatest in the UFC so far. Burns is a really good fighter, so I'm not putting him down at all. But still seeing him be a 5-6-1 favorite over a guy making his UFC debut is just kind of going to be an insult to Moret. But that being said, it's just styles make fights. And stylistically, this is a tough matchup for Moret because he is more of a grappling-based fighter, more of a ground guy. He's a well-rounder fighter. Don't make no mistake about that. He's training at the MMA lab, so he's coming from a good camp, and he does have a little bit of striking, but the best attribute in Moret's game is just kind of grinding people out, looking for that submission. I mean, he has really good subs. If you watch how quick he's able to kind of scramble and get in position once he's on the ground, it's really impressive. The bad part about Moret for this fight is Burns is better. I mean, he's not going to out-grapple Burns. Moret's not going to out-grapple Burns. Burns is just going to be a step ahead of him. I think Burns could finish Moret on the ground. Moret does have some solid submission defense, but I guess a guy like Burns, that's probably not going to be enough anyway. So on the feet, it's going to be close. I think it'll go back and forth, and Moret is going to be a warrior. He's going to be game. He's going to make this fight tough. But the more time that this fight spends on the ground, the more it's going to favor Burns. So I'd expect Burns to actually finish if it does hit the ground and they play around a little bit on the ground. I think Burns is going to get the best of them there. If it stays upright, I think it'll be pretty competitive with Burns maybe edging it out there as well. So stylistically, it's a tough matchup for Moret. I'm going to pick Burns to win. I'm not going to say much more about it because, like I said, styles make fights, and I just think stylistically it's a bad matchup. That's why you're seeing the line this high. But Moret, outside of this fight, hopefully they give him somebody else that he can stylistically match up with better, because he can win some fights at 155 pounds in the UFC. So I'm expecting to see that happen in the future outside of this fight, because I think he is going to lose to Burns. So the pick is Burns.
Yeah, Moret kind of reminds me of Gerald Meerschaert a little bit. You know, that just guy that's been around the Midwest a while and has some experience. He's savvy and could, you know, make a bit of an impact in the UFC, you know, not make a run or anything, but, you know, could get some wins and stick around for a little bit. But I mean, this is a nightmare matchup for him. As Nick mentioned, I mean, Moret is basically, if he finishes his opponent, he gets submissions. And Gilbert Burns was the grappling coach for the Black Zillions. I mean, this guy is an extremely accomplished grappler. You're just not going to win a ground fight against him for the most part. I mean, unless you are cream of the crop, wrestler or grappler. And while Moret has some skill, I mean, he's not at Gilbert Burns' skill. The only way Moret gets a submission in this fight is if he horribly hurts Burns and he's just out of sorts and he locks onto something before Burns can, catch onto it. So, on the feet, Burns should have the edge. You know, Moret isn't that much of a striker. He's capable, but I mean, Burns is a decent enough striker that he should be able to get the edge there. And then if it goes to the floor, I do not see Moret catching Burns with anything. And I just think, Burns wins pretty much wherever this fight goes. So just a tough stylistic matchup for Moret to make in his UFC debut. And I'm not sure why they matched him up this way, but yeah, this is just a really, really rough one for him. So Burns should win. I completely understand why he's a huge favorite. Now moving on to the Fox prelims. In the middleweight division, we have Krzysztof Żatko, who is 19-3, taking on Brad Tavares, who is 16-5. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Tavares opened minus 215, the comeback on Żatko plus 170. Minus 215, plus 170. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, the current line is actually Tavares at minus 135, comeback on Żatko plus 105. Much more in the reality aspect of things, because there's no way Tavares should be a 2-1 favorite over Żatko. So that opener was a head scratcher, to say the least. And pick a fight with a slight lean towards Tavares. I can understand it. You can actually flip the line and make Jotko a slight favorite here too. Pick him with a slight lean towards Jotko. Either way, you could see it. I mean, this is going to be a competitive fight, split decision type of fight. If it does hit the scorecards, I mean, that's the type of fight we can expect here. Overall, I mean, if you look at these guys, they're both very talented, both skilled. Tavares is actually, he's had a heck of a UFC career. I mean, if you look at his losses, they're all to respectable opponents. I mean, his chin is the worst part of his game. That's the thing that lets him down the most. And the highlight of that would be the Tim Bosch fight. He was doing really well in that fight, and then Bosch ends up catching him in the second round out of nowhere and just puts Tavares out. So that chin, even though it's withstood the pressure of guys like Romero, and Romero was torching him in that fight, and Tavares somehow survived. But again, with the one punch, he could get dropped by a guy like Bosch, which Bosch does have a ton of power as well. Obviously, Whitaker, that's not a surprise how much punching power he has and gets rid of him. So Tavares' chin is his biggest enemy, really. Outside of that, the guy's striking is on point. He's got power. He mixes things up well. His kicking game's on point as well. He obviously trains at a good camp, and Extreme Couture for him throughout his career has worked wonders. I mean, he's definitely improved his game. His takedown defense is excellent. So there's a lot of good things to say about Tavares. We have a good interview with him and Frank Trigg up on the site right now, so I urge you guys to check it out. He just recently had a child. He gets into a little bit of his personal life and his training for this fight as well, so worth a listen for sure. That being said, I'm not sure he matches up that great with Jocko. I do expect a competitive fight, but I think Jocko is obviously going to have a little bit of length on him. I think Jocko, if he keeps on putting the pressure forward and moving forward like he did even in that Uriah Hall fight, Jocko's coming off a devastating loss, back-to-back losses, obviously, but the fight against Branch, at least, it was a close, competitive, split decision type of loss. The disappointing loss was the Hall loss, because he was doing really well in that fight. Dominated Hall in the first round. He was looking good in round two, and then Hall started putting the pressure on and got through with a big right hand, and it dropped Jocko, and that was pretty much the end of the story. So Jocko's coming off back-to-back losses, and he was on his way towards a title shot. I mean, potentially, you know, lining himself for a really good spot and maybe getting a shot at the gold. And that's all been derailed due to his last couple of performances. So he's definitely going to look to rebound and get back on track here. And I think he could do that against Tavares. Again, I'm expecting a competitive back and forth fight, but if Jocko puts a pressure on, I think that he's going to be landing a little bit more. I trust his chin slightly more. I know he's coming off that knockout loss, but I still trust his chin a little bit more than I do Tavares. So if these guys start exchanging, I think it's going to be Tavares the one going down out of the two. And then I also think Jocko is probably a little bit better in the clinch. And I think it will end up taking place in the clinch. This fight will up against the cage some as well. So I just think Jotka will grind out the scorecards here, and I think he has more of a chance to win if it does happen to end inside as well. So my slight lean is towards Jocko. I think he's just a better fighter right now, and I think he desperately needs to fight smart and bounce back and get back on track here. So a win over Tavares is the perfect formula to do that, because it's a respectable win for sure. So I just think Jocko is simply better right now at this point, so hopefully he shows up and proves it.
A win over Tavares would be impressive, but it's not easy. I mean, Brett Tavares doesn't have a very good chin, but other than that, I mean, he's a fighter that can stifle a lot of different offensive styles. Brett Tavares is a pretty solid technical striker that utilizes distance well, and, you know, he keeps his jab in his opponent's face, and he can just really frustrate opponents. I mean, we've seen it multiple times against pretty good fighters, like when Tavares fought Lorenz Larkin. I mean, he just completely stifled Larkin's athleticism. When he fought Elias Theodoro, even though Theodoro got a couple takedowns, I mean, Tavares was able to reverse a little bit, get top position, pass, get a takedown of his own, and then land some strikes on the feet. And then his last fight, Tavares looked amazing against Talis Lidis. I mean, and he was coming in into that fight as Lidis was the guy with a little bit more of the hype. I mean, he had a competitive fight against Michael Bisping, and Tavares just dominated him. I mean, it was a very one-sided striking display. It was very impressive. And if Krzysztof Jotko is not able to settle in, then Tavares can make him uncomfortable for three straight rounds. The biggest problem with Tavares, and it's always been his biggest problem, has been his chin. It's not very good. It's failed him in the past, like when he got knocked out by Robert Whittaker, when he got knocked out by Tim Bosch. So That clearly is an issue, but Tavares is on a pretty solid 3-fight win streak, with 2 of those wins being impressive victories over, you know, solid middleweights in the division. And Jotko, while he's been a little bit unlucky, I mean, he does seem like, you know, he's losing a little bit of his luster. I mean, he was on this big run, and now he's lost to Dave Branch and to Uriah Hall. So this could be a trap fight for him as well, hoping that he rebounds, but Tavares has a style that could make him look bad. It just depends if Jocko can get his boxing going, because Jocko has some power, he has a good pace, and if he can connect with his hands on Tavares' chin, he's going to be in great shape, but I just don't know how easy that's going to be, because Tavares uses distance so well, even though he has a little bit of a shorter reach, and he mixes in his kicks really well. So I'm leaning Brad Tavares, but I mean, if Jotko connects on the chin, Tavares could be in huge trouble. But my pick is going to be Tavares. Now dropping down to the flyweight division, we have Wilson Hayes, who is 22-8, taking on John Moraga, who is 18-6. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Hayes open -165, Moraga +125. Right now over at BetDSI, it is currently Hayes -135, the comeback on Moraga at +105. So a lot of margins have tightened up, a little bit more action coming in Moraga's way. As crazy as it's going to sound, I agree with it. I mean, Hayes is one of the best, and he's been obviously at the lighter weight classes for a long time. Underrated, really. I mean, bantamweight, he was great. I mean, throughout his career, obviously flyweight even better. I mean, he had a title shot against Demetrius Johnson, didn't work out so well for him. But again, I mean, the list is endless with guys that don't work out getting that title shot against Demetrius Johnson. So not a bad loss. But the problem with me here with Hayes is, I mean, he's one of the most dominant grapplers that we've seen in a long time. I mean, ever really, as far as the grappling realm goes, and how he utilizes his jiu-jitsu in the cage with his takedown skill and the finishing ability and the grinding that he has. And he's actually improved that as well. He's one of these grapplers that's through the years developed a pretty decent stand-up game to go along with it. Now, I'm saying decent for a grappler, but not overly a threat in most cases, especially against other guys that have good striking or some punching power as well. So Hayes in this fight, in my opinion, has to get it to the floor. If not, he's going to get knocked out. Cejudo knocked him out in the last fight. Now Cejudo has a ton of power, and he's improved quite a bit as well. So I'm not saying Cejudo is Moraga, but Moraga definitely has a lot of punching power. He's proven it time and time again. And I think Hayes at age 33, but in fight years way beyond that. I know Moraga's actually a year older, but not in fight years. He's not. So, I mean, Hayes's chin is definitely not going to get any better. And Moraga does punch very hard. He just has to keep the fight upright and off his back. And Moraga through his career has been put on his back and has been out grappled at times as well. Even though he's got decent BJJ, it's not a level of Hayes. So this is, in my opinion, your grappler versus wrestler type of striker type of matchup here. Moraga's going to have to use his wrestling backwards to keep this fight upright so he can utilize his strength, which is a striking game, to get the knockout over Hayes. I think he could do it. I mean, again, I wouldn't be saying this probably in Hayes' prime, but I think Hayes is definitely on a decline. It's unfortunate for him as well because, you know, he just earned that title shot not long ago, and I'm saying he's on a decline, but I think that's pretty much it for him. He's going to be a relevant gatekeeper type of person, as is Moraga, really. Let's face it here. Let's be honest. I don't think either one of these guys see another title shot anytime soon. So that being said, they're both going to be difficult outs. And I think Moraga here is starting to get a little bit of confidence back. He's won 2 in a row coming off a knockout win. So this is a good spot for him to get another impressive win on his resume and put Hayes, you know, in check here by knocking him out. So I think Moraga probably finishes Hayes. He just needs to keep off the ground. Now, again, easier said than done, but for some reason, I think his takedown defense is going to be up to the challenge here against Hayes. So my pick is going to be Moraga. I think he has a good shot of knocking him out.
Moraga and Hayes, I mean, there's not much extra to add here. Hayes has an elite ground game, and when he can get that ground game going, I mean, he's going to win fights, whether it's by submission or by decision. If Moraga is able to connect with Hayes before he can get that ground game going, then Moraga's going to win. I mean, just look at that last fight against Babulatov. I mean, that was a guy that entered the UFC on a huge wave of hype, big undefeated streak, and Moraga clipped him, hurt him, put him away. I mean, that was impressive. That was a huge win for Moraga. a big upset. And I think if Moraga does the same thing here against Hayes, then he's going to win too. I mean, it just all boils down to whether or not Moraga can find Hayes's chin before Hayes gets a takedown. And I don't know if Hayes will be able to get a finish on Moraga if he does get a takedown. So Hayes would have to probably get takedowns for three straight rounds. And I don't know if he'll be able to do it. I think at some point Moraga does find Hayes's chin and puts him away. So I'm going to side with John Moraga. But again, Wilson Hayes's ground game should be respected. And it's not out of the realm of possibility that he does get this fight to the floor and at least win a decision. But my pick is going to be Moraga. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Muslim Salikov, who is 12-2, taking on Ricky Rainey, who is 13-4. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Salikov opens -260, Rainey +180. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, the current price is Salikov -190, the comeback up at Rainey +150. So more action coming in Rainey's way. I get it. Rainey, definitely a talented fighter, a veteran of a lot of solid leagues, including Bellator outside of the UFC. So he's been around for a long time, fought decent competition. The guy's tough, man. He's no easy out at all. He's a really good striker. He's got knockout power, knockout potential. He's been facing a lot of good grapplers, wrestlers, and he's been getting to the point where he's stuffing these takedowns and keeping the fight upright and utilizing his strength and reach. I mean, the guy has long reach and again, knockout power, and everything about Rainey's game is solid. I mean, he's definitely a threat, but the problem is, he's facing a striker, not a wrestler here. I know he's faced Njokwani before in the past as well, and he actually had a little bit of success there as well. But still, I think that this is a different level type of a striker here that he's facing in Salikov. And I think that what you're going to see here is, even though he's going to have the reach advantage, Salikov's unique striking ability is going to come into play. He spins like no one else, and he's so accurate with his spinning technique, whether it's a spinning back kick to the body or a spinning wheel kick to the head. I mean, the guy's lightning fast with him. The timing is amazing, really, and he's on point with him. So he obviously has a decorated kickboxing background, and he's a KO artist for a reason. I mean, that's what he's known for. So in his debut, he ended up losing to a grappler, wrestler, and Alex Garcia, and his takedown defense actually was okay, considering Garcia, you know, that was his path to victory there, and he knew he was going to implement that game plan. So I think that Salikov is actually performing at a decent level despite him coming into the UFC and losing that debut. He's not facing another wrestler grinder here. I'm sure Rainey's going to want to probably explore that option, but he's not going to do so well by doing that. I think Salikov's going to be able to keep this fight upright, and along the way he's going to land and punish Rainey, and I think there's a good chance he actually finishes this fight. So even though I'm expecting Rainey to be a savvy vet and put up a fight here, I think Salikov's going to be able to really pick him apart and probably land a highlight reel type of knockout. So stylistically, I think this is a nightmare matchup for Rainey. So I'm going to pick Salikov to win, and I think the opener was probably more accurate than whether public took the line right now.
Yeah, Muslim Salikov, you know, his UFC debut clearly didn't go the way that he wanted it to go. I mean, the guy is a flashy striker that throws a ridiculous amount of spinning attacks and unorthodox strikes, throws a ton of feints at his opponents, mixes things up with his stances. I mean, he's just lightning in a bottle. And Ricky Rainey, you know, coming from Bellator, you know, this is a guy that Bellator brought in to feed to Michael Page, one of their flashy strikers in the welterweight division. And guess what? That's exactly what happened. He went in there, he traded with Michael Page, and then he got finished. So I think that's what happens here. Salikov, you know, in his last fight against Alex Garcia, you know, Garcia really didn't want much of anything to do with him on the feet and repeatedly went for takedowns. Salikov fended him off for the most part, showed, I thought, decent takedown defense and was able to get back to his feet a couple times, but just made one mistake when he did get taken down, turned his back, left his neck just exposed enough, and locked in a chin lock that was tight enough to force a tap. So against Ricky Rainey, that's just not going to happen. Unless Rainey knocks Salikov out, then he's not going to win. I mean, Rainey has some power. He does have a pretty large reach advantage over Salikov, but I just don't think he has the technique or the flash and pizzazz that Salikov presents. So I think at some point Salikov connects with a wicked, twisting, tornado-type attack, and it'll be on some highlight reels. So my pick is going to be Salikov. Now, moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have Tim Boach, who is 21-11, taking on Antonio Carlos Jr., who is 10-2 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Junior open minus 245, the comeback on Boach at plus 175. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, minus 265 for Carlos Jr. Boach at plus 215, so line margins have tightened up a little bit. And staying about the same spot or so. Two action definitely coming into this fight. I've seen it go up and down a little bit as far as line movement goes overall. And they are definitely getting two way action because a lot of people out there, it seems like Boach is almost the popular opinion for an underdog play here in most cases. And I get it stylistically. I mean, Boach is a wrestler. He's got a ton of knockout power. Carlos Jr. at times has looked underwhelming, really. I mean, we could see the potential he has, especially since he's dropped to 185 pounds. But again, he has those performances sometimes that kind of scratch your head and wonder, is this guy ever going to really make a legit improvement or a big run? Because he definitely has a unique skill set. Carlos Jr. is a really good grappler. I mean, he usually gets a fight to the ground, and if so, he could finish you on the ground like no other. I mean, he has a really elite-level grappling game. Outside of that, I mean, he's got a little bit of length for the division as well. He's got a little bit of power, and his stand-up game is improving. So Carlos Jr. is definitely a tough out in most cases. Now, he does tend to fade as the fight progresses a little bit. At times he doesn't look that bad, but at other times he does. I mean, if he gets in deep waters, he does. You can see him slowing down a little bit. Now, Boach has been a little bit spotty in his career as well, with the conditioning, with his chin, especially as of late. He's 37 years old, for crying out loud. So the guy's been around for a long time. And it's kind of nice to see a little resurgence here towards the end of his career. I mean, he's coming off of a very impressive knockout win over Johnny Hendricks. Before that, I mean, he did lose to Jacare Souza. I mean, he got submitted, but who doesn't Jacare sub once he gets you to the ground? But outside of that, I mean, the two fights before that, with Saman and then, Natal, I mean, those were impressive wins for Boach as well. So I thought, honestly, you could stick a fork in him before those wins, but Boach did show up and he got the job done here. So it's almost like when Boach focuses and you know, he definitely has his mind and heart and training, everything going well. He performs relatively well, but he's been a little bit too unsteady for me to trust at this point. And I think Carlos Jr. has the upside here. I think that he can get this fight to the ground despite Boach having solid takedown defense. I think Carlos Jr. still does get this fight to the ground. And once on the ground, he's going to probably end up finishing Boach by submission. So that's how I think the fight plays out. Be careful out there. I know it's a dogger fight situation for a dogger pass situation for sure on this fight. And I wouldn't lay the chalk on Carlos Jr., so I understand you guys may be taking a stab at the dog, but honestly, I wouldn't throw my money away on Boach in this fight either. So I think Carlos Jr. does get the job done. I think gets it to the floor, and he does submit him. So for me, I'm staying away from this fight personally. Even though the line might seem a tad bit high, I still think that in this spot, Carlos Jr. should not lose. So Boach is going to be game probably, but I still expect him to lose this fight. So the pick is Carlos Jr.
And I don't know. Call me crazy, but I think this could be a winnable fight for Boach. The biggest issue clearly is that Boach has not had historically very good submission defense, and Antonio Carlos Jr. is primarily, if he's going to get a finish, a submission fighter. I mean, if Carlos Jr. puts Boach on his back, you know, all bets are off. I think he probably wins this fight. If he doesn't, though, you know, Boach being a pretty good wrestler, Boach being physically powerful and strong, and having above-average stand-up, you know, Boach could really give Carlos Jr. fits. It just all boils down to whether or not Carlos Jr. can put Boach on his back. If he can't do it, then this fight gets interesting in a hurry. Boach has clearly got some power. I mean, he just tore through Johnny Hendricks. I mean, that was an impressive finish of Hendricks. And yeah, you know, it's Johnny Hendricks at middleweight, but I mean, that's still a former champion. And, you know, Boach made him look like he didn't even deserve to be in the same octagon with him. So if Tim Boach can land some heavy hands against Antonio Carlos Jr., we've seen Carlos Jr. Fade in fights. Like when he starts to lose, I mean, he can, you know, really start to lose. I mean, you look at the Dan Kelly fight as the primary example of all of that. So I can see Tim Boach winning this fight. I mean, I can also see Carlos Jr. just putting Boach on his back right away and then, you know, eventually getting a Kimura or something. But I can also see Tim Boach landing some heavy hands and fending off takedowns, maybe getting a takedown of his own because he is a pretty good wrestler. He probably does have overall better wrestling than Carlos Jr. So if Boach uses it offensively, maybe that can catch Carlos Jr. off guard. Carlos Jr. did get out wrestled, when he was in the light heavyweight division. So that's not entirely not out of the realm of possibility. So I think Tim Boach does have some paths to victory here. And, you always do have to be careful with Carlos Jr. based on, you know, historical performances where he has had letdowns. And when things aren't going well for him, sometimes, you know, he gives up a little bit. So I'm going to side with Tim Boach. I might be crazy. And Carlos Jr. clearly is, I would say, overall the better fighter. But I don't know. I have a gut feeling that Boach lands some really big strikes and Carlos Jr. wilts a little bit. So Boach is my pick. Now moving on to the main card on Big Network Fox, we have a women's strawweight contest between Michelle Waterson, who is 14-6, and Courtney Casey, who is 7-5. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Fight open -120 either way, -120 Waterson, -120 Casey. And looking at the current line over at BetDSI, it is currently at -125 Casey, the comeback, -105 on Waterson. So a lot more have tightened up a little bit. Now a little bit more action coming in Casey's way. This is a tough fight. I mean, both these ladies are definitely talented for 115 pounds. I mean, they're going to be towards the top of the food chain for sure. And deservingly so, because they're both very talented, well-rounded ladies that bring it every time they fight. I mean, they're always in fun scraps for sure. Obviously, Casey's coming off a disappointing close split decision loss to Felice Herrig in her last fight. And Waterson coming off of just a devastating loss, really, to Tisha Torres, because backing that up with a devastating loss to Nama Yunus, the current champion. I mean, two very talented, again, top of the food chain type of fighters that she's losing to. So she's not losing to just anybody. I mean, they're contenders that Waterson's losing to. So that tells you the caliber of competition she's facing as well. So this is a great fight because, like I said, I think both of these ladies match up relatively well with each other. Waterson has that karate style on the feet. She's going to implement a lot of kicks in her game. On the ground, she's tough to deal with because she's so flexible with skill and, you know, technique. She's got good submissions. She's on point with them as far as setting them up and being accurate and just getting the job done on the ground as well. I mean, I believe she has 9 submission wins in her career. So the majority of her wins have come by submission. So Waterson is no joke on the ground. But you could say the same thing for Casey, Casey Sanchez as well. That is, I think that Courtney Casey has looked really good. She's actually improved. That's one thing, I guess, if you look at both of these ladies and what they've done recently, I think there's more of an improvement of Courtney Casey Sanchez than there has been Waterson. Waterson, she is getting better, but I see the strides that Casey Sanchez is taking over Waterson, meaning that to me, I knew the kind of talent Casey Sanchez possessed, like as far as her striking ability and her ground ability and the size that she has, 115 pounds. But at the early part of her career, she was a little bit of a letdown. I mean, she was getting out conditioned by these athletes a little bit. She would slow down as the fight progressed and she would lose that way. It would really affected her performance a lot. But then she started getting a little bit more focused. She started training properly. She started just getting on track, getting a little bit more confidence. And you saw that in her performances. I mean, her win over Randa Marcos. Randa Marcos is a very talented fighter and she just ran through her. That was very impressive. The loss that she had to Gadella was actually impressive as well, because I honestly thought Gadella would have an easier time with Courtney Casey in that fight. But Casey gave Gadella all she could handle. I mean, she did lose a clear decision, but at the same time, in my opinion, it was an improvement. And then, of course, beating a legend like Jessica Aguilar not long ago either, I think that says a lot as well, because, again, not too long ago, Casey Sanchez would have lost that fight. So to me, I'm saying all this because I think that her improvement has been more noticeable than Waterson. I mean, she's adapting. She's getting better. She's getting more confident. And she's implementing all the new techniques, and it shows in her fights. So she can stand up and war with you on the feet. She could take you down and finish you on the ground. So in this matchup here, she's going to have a little bit of size over Watterson. She's going to have a little bit of length. And I think on the feet, her hands are going to be the difference here. Watterson's going to want to utilize her strikes, her kicking game. But I think Casey's going to close that gap and just basically outbox her to the point where she does a little bit of damage and wears into Watterson a little bit. And if she gets the fight to the floor, I think it could go either way. These girls are both talented enough to submit each other, but I think Casey Sanchez survives the ground battle and probably gets more dominant position and maybe even finishes Watterson, because you get Watterson's back, it's definitely a spot where she can get in some trouble, as we've seen in the past. So I think this fight's going to play out in all areas. It's going to be a war. It's going to be a great fight. Both of these ladies are going to have their moments, but in the end, it's going to be Courtney Casey Sanchez that comes away with a win. I think she has a little bit of a better shot at finishing, and I think if it does hit the scorecards, I think they're going to go her way as well. So the improvement that I've seen favors Casey more than it does Watterson, in my opinion. I think Watterson's almost, I hate to say it, but a decline type of fighter, that her best days possibly are behind her, even though she is going to still win, obviously, some fights in this weight class, where I think Casey Sanchez's best days might be still ahead of her. So that's how I feel about this fight. So my pick is Casey Sanchez to win.
Overall, Courtney Casey is the larger fighter. She's going to have a height advantage, a reach advantage, I would say a physical strength advantage. But in terms of actual technique, Michelle Watterson is the better fighter. I mean, she's the better striker. She's more accurate. Casey is a little bit more active, but, you know, she also gets hit more too. So, you know, they've both been in there against elite competition, with Watterson fighting Torres and Nama Yunus and Courtney Casey fighting Gadelha. So, and they both lost those fights. So, you know, it's kind of tough to see really who would get the better of each other here. On the ground, I would say that Casey has slightly better wrestling, but I think Watterson is the better grappler and a little bit more dangerous with submissions, although Casey does have a pretty good armbar. But I don't see Watterson getting caught with an armbar from Casey. On the feet, Watterson's kicking game is going to be very important, because she is giving up a bit of reach, and she has been hurt in fights, like against Rose, when she ate that pretty nasty head kick. So I think Watterson is going to have to utilize the karate hottie kicking game that she is known for a little bit. And if she can work that in, mix in some combinations, I think that she can outpoint Casey standing. And if it goes to the floor, while I think Casey might be able to get top position, Watterson should have the grappling edge as well. So my biggest concern is that Casey just bullies Watterson, which could happen. But, you know, she's had trouble bullying people in the past. I thought that she'd be able to bully Felice Herrick, and she didn't. So I think Michelle Watterson, being the more technically sound fighter, helps her get the edge here. So Watterson is my pick. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Israel Adesanya, who is 12-0, taking on Marvin Vettori, who is 12-3-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Adesanya open minus 260, Vettori plus 180. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it is currently Adesanya at minus 275, the comeback on Vettori plus 225. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, and there is two-way action coming in this fight. We've seen the line bounce back and forth, up and down a little bit on the .mes screen all week. So there is definitely two-way action coming in this fight. Vettori is a very popular fighter, so seeing him at a plus 225 price tag is very tempting out there, especially when he's facing primarily a striker. And Vettori is a little bit more than that. Vettori has obviously a striking is one of his better attributes as well, but he gets some takedowns and he has a decent ground game to go along with it. So Vettori should be a little bit farther along in his overall MMA game in his career right now, but Adesanya is the type of fighter that's an elite level striker that is just a special athlete that has adapted very well and very fast, I think, to MMA. Of course, he's an elite level kickboxer, so that's what I'm referring to. And I mean, his striking is definitely on point. And here against Vettori, Vittori's going to be the one that wants to try to push forward a little bit and be aggressive and laying hands on Adesanya, but Adesanya is going to be the one picking him apart, and Vittori's aggression is actually going to probably just work right into Adesanya's hands here in this spot if he decides to stay upright. So Vettori's definitely going to go for takedowns, and he might have a little success. Adesanya's still improving on that takedown defense. It is getting good. It's getting to the point where he's hard to hold down. So here's the trick. I think Vettori's going to probably have some early success, but Adesanya's going to make him work for all the success that he has. And as the fight progresses, I mean, we've seen it even in Adesanya's official debut against Wilkinson. He wore him out, and by round two, Wilkinson was very tired. Now, of course, Vettori, in my opinion, is a better fighter than Wilkinson, and he's going to be more of a challenge. But I could really see a lot of the similarities that took place in that fight and Adesanya's debut take place in this fight as well, meaning that the first round might be relatively close. Vettori might even steal it, but as the fight progresses, we've seen typically in Vettori's fights, he starts slowing down a little bit, and that pressure starts to not be as high. And if that starts to be the case here against Adesanya, I think Adesanya is going to put his pressure on, and then he can possibly finish Vettori or even steal round two or three for sure and get the decision on the card. So I think Adesanya is going to perform relatively well here, even if it's not looking that great for him early on. As the fight progresses, he's going to take over, and the guy is a special type of talent, and the UFC might have really picked up a great addition to their middleweight division here without even realizing what potential Adesanya really has. I mean, truthfully, I think this guy gets on a roll and they push him the right way. He could be fighting for that title at some point as soon as he gets, you know, obviously a little bit more of that ground game developed and that takedown defense in check. I mean, the guy is an elite level striker and he can definitely make a run towards that title. So my pick is Adesanya. I think he's going to be impressive here against Vettori. I think, again, it'll be a challenge at first, but as it progresses, I think a lot of people are going to open their eyes and see how good Adesanya could really be. So the pick is Adesanya to win, maybe inside the distance, but if not, I think he can win at least on the scorecards as well.
Yeah, I really like Adesanya. I mean, this guy is an extremely exciting middleweight prospect coming over from, K1 Glory Kickboxing. The guy fights along. He has some unorthodox attacks. He has great jabs, good combinations, knees, kicks, punches. I mean, you name it. This guy is going to be able to outstrike just about anybody in the middleweight division. The biggest issue still is what happens if he faces somebody that can repeatedly take him down and keep him down. Vettori does have decent takedowns. He's, you know, not the greatest wrestler in the world, but I mean, he can definitely pick up takedowns and he's explosive enough to shoot in with a big double leg and potentially put Adesanya on his back. Now, Adesanya faced a guy that wanted to repeatedly take him down in his UFC debut in Nicholson, and Nicholson did, you know, get a couple takedowns and did, spend a lot of that fight, pushing around Adesanya, forcing clinch exchanges, stuff like that. So we did get to see Adesanya tested, but you know, he passed that test. He got frustrated a little bit early, but, he did not stay down when he did get taken down. And then, once he started to let loose, I mean, he really punished Nicholson on the feet. And I think that can happen here too. I think Vettori needs to put Adesanya away quickly if he wants to win, whether it's by submission or ground and pound. And if that doesn't happen, I think Vettori just spends too much energy and gets a little tired, and Adesanya will absolutely feast on Vettori if he is not at 100%. So I think Vettori could win round one, but I see Adesanya not just winning round two or three, but I think just really opening up a can of whoop-ass on him. So I think Adesanya wins by TKO at some point in the second or third round. Moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the welterweight division, we have Carlos Condit, who is 30-11, taking on Alex Oliveira, who is 17-4-1 with two no contests. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Oliveira open -160, Condit +120. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it is currently with Oliveira -215, the comeback on Condit +170. This is a tricky opener, tricky line to set for sure. You got the guy that everybody loves and respected throughout his entire MMA career, especially in the UFC, Carlos Condit. I mean, the guy brings it. He's such a good fighter, such a good example for fighters. I mean, in and out of the cage, everything about Condit. I mean, that's why he's so popular. He gets into the cage and he gives you his all. And really, his kryptonite – throughout his career has been his takedown defense and getting out wrestled and out grinded by people. Other than that, man, when he stands up and bangs, I mean, he brings it. Like I said, he was one of the better strikers at 170 pounds for a long time. I mean, his submission game to go along with it, just a well-rounded fighter. And he doesn't have bad wrestling in his own right. It's just other guys that have better wrestling were able to outgrind him. And if he doesn't submit him on the ground, then obviously he's going to lose those fights. So that's been his kryptonite. And that's why his UFC record isn't the greatest, but he's faced a lot of great competition. And again, the guy's a warrior. I mean, his conditioning, he can go endless. I mean, typically speaking, he just doesn't have those issues and he doesn't have those concerns. So he'll outlast you. He'll put it on when he needs to. And he's had some great wins. So much respect for Carlos Condit. But unfortunately for him, I do think he probably loses his fight to Oliveira as well. Oliveira is one of these guys that he's had his ups and downs already. I mean, he's coming off of a devastating loss, really, in my opinion, because, I mean, nobody was really expecting him to look kind of as off as he did against Medeiros. I mean, give credit to Medeiros for getting that late knockout in the third round there, but that was a win I was expecting Oliveira to kind of get in that spot there as well. I mean, if you look before that, his wins over LaFleur and his wins over Tim Means, I mean, those were good wins. So he definitely had a setback with Medeiros in that loss. And he can't afford to make the same mistakes against Condit here either, because again, Condit, he's dangerous even when he goes late. So his conditioning, Oliveira's conditioning has to hold up here in this fight, because he can be dominating this fight early. And if he does not put Condit away, Condit will be game and he'll be looking to put him away late. That's for sure. So that's where Oliveira, it's a little sketchy for him. I think he needs to come in this fight. He is taking it on short notice. He's in for Matt Brown. And he does have some cardio issues from time to time, but with all that being said, I still think his path to victory is pretty clear. I think Oliveira is going to get this fight to the ground, and on the ground, he's going to give Condit fits. I mean, if Condit can't wrap him up in a triangle, or an armbar type of submission, I think Oliveira is going to probably take his back and then maybe even choke Condit out. So for me, it's Oliveira grinding out Condit. It's a path to victory here. It's possibly submitting Condit as well. I just think that's probably how he gets it done. So not a huge confidence in this weird, typical, like, situation here with Oliveira stepping in at short notice over a guy that's considered a legend in the welterweight division of Carlos Condit. I mean, I could see Condit, he desperately needs a win, and I could see him pulling one out, but I still have to side with Oliveira. So be careful if you're betting this fight. It's just kind of a head scratcher to me, because I believe Oliveira is going to get the job done, but laying 2-1 is kind of tough as well. So the pick is Oliveira though.
You know, if this fight had taken place, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, Carlos Condit would have been my pick, you know, without even a second thought. I'd have been like, why is Carlos Condit even fighting this guy? But Alex Oliveira has been on a bit of a run. Granted, he did lose that last fight to Medeiros, but, you know, he was picking up some quality victories in the UFC welterweight division. And Carlos Condit just looked awful in his return fight against Neil Magny. And I don't know why he wants to fight again. I mean, when you look that bad after a significantly long layoff, I'm just more concerned about Carlos Condit. I mean, this was a guy that wasn't sure he wanted to fight again. You know, he was worried about the damage he's taken in fights. And then he comes back and he fights Neil Magny and he just was a shell of himself there. I mean, there was no aggression. He didn't hardly land a strike in that fight. I mean, it was just an atrocious performance. And watching that, Carlos Condit is one of my favorite fighters of all time in terms of the exciting fights that he's put on throughout his career. But going back to his last two fights now, getting just crushed by Demian Maia in the first round, landing one strike before being put away in the first round, and then coming back over a year later and just laying that egg against Neil Magny. I mean, I just don't really want to see this guy fight again. I mean, it just, he doesn't look the same. He doesn't have that same fire. I mean, he's focusing on his coffee business in the New Mexico area. I don't know why he's fighting. So I think Alex Oliveira is fighting because he's a fighter right now and that's all he cares about. And, you know, he goes out there and he mixes things up well. Oliveira has shown a decent ground game and he's an above average striker. I mean, that's actually what he was initially known for, was his striking. And then he's added some pretty good ground skills to that striking. And, I mean, my biggest issue with Oliveira is he can slow down a little bit and maybe fade if, you know, if he hurts Condit early and Condit survives, maybe Condit can turn the tide on him. But for the most part, I just think that Oliveira is going to be too much. And I don't know if Carlos Condit can channel the old Carlos Condit. You know, Father Time wins every battle. And I think, this might be, the last time we see Condit fight. So my pick is going to be Alex Oliveira. Now moving on to the main event of the evening in the lightweight division, we have Dustin Poirier, who is 22-5, taking on Justin Gaethje, who is 18-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Poirier open -130, Gaethje -110. Right now it's Poirier -140, Gaethje is at +110. So a decent line on the opener, and line margins have tightened up a little bit. A little bit more action coming in Poirier's way. It looks like more people out there are supporting him. I mean, this is another tough fight, in my opinion, because both these guys have their issues. Poirier, in my opinion, the biggest issue that he has is his chin. It's let him down time and time again. I know that since he's been back up to lightweight outside of that Michael Johnson fight, Poirier has actually looked pretty decent. I mean, it's impressive what he's been able to really do at lightweight. So I think his move from featherweight to lightweight has done him well, and I think that was a smart decision for sure for him, because he's picked up some quality wins. I mean, even that Eddie Alvarez crazy ending there where it was ended up being ruled a no contest. I mean, he was winning that fight as well and picking up wins over Pettis, Miller, Bobby Green, impressively as he did. Even Joe Duffy, a few fights back as well. So it's been a good run that he's been on. And, I mean, the guy's striking is on point. We know how well rounded he is. His wrestling at times, he just uses everything at the right time. But at the same time, in my opinion, Poirier, his conditioning does come into play as well. So I should mention, along with his chin, what's bothered me in the past is also his ability to kind of slow down. He's a little bit of a front runner. And then as the fight progresses, sometimes if he gets in deeper waters, he does tend to slow down a little bit. Now, it hasn't been as much of an issue at lightweight, but still he has that, I think, that flaw in him as well. So Gaethje, on the other hand, he does fight tired and he does tend to slow down as the fight progresses as well, because he puts so much into every strike that he throws. But Gaethje's the type of fighter, in my opinion, that could go like 5, 6, 7 rounds and still look like he's tired after the second round and then just keep on going, because he has endless heart and endless, you know, will to win type of fighter is what you get with Gaethje. And then of course his striking is explosive. It's powerful. He's dangerous on the feet as well. He's just relentless. Those leg kicks are nasty. I mean, a lot of Gaethje's game revolves around his stand-up game, which is very dangerous and very effective as well. Now, of course, he has a wrestling background in his own right, so he's not the easiest guy to control on the ground. So I'm expecting this fight to kind of play out on the feet. And on the feet, we're going to see a firefight. So it's whose chin holds up the best, in my opinion. Both these guys offensively can have a lot of success against each other. I trust Gaethje's chin just a little bit more. I know he's coming off, in my opinion, what is kind of a bad loss to Eddie Alvarez. Yeah, you got to take your hat off to Alvarez. I'm kind of glad to see him stay relevant and not suffer, you know, not be what we remember him with the Conor McGregor fight, because that was still severely disappointing for Eddie Alvarez, losing like that. So him bouncing back and getting a win over a guy like Gaethje is very important to me, in my opinion, for the career of Eddie Alvarez, obviously. But that being said, it was kind of a bad loss for Gaethje. So that does not sit well with me in the back of my head either, because Gaethje just accepts taking too much punishment. And at this weight class, especially in the high caliber fights that he's getting with the guys that are in the top end of the lightweight division, these guys can hit, and you can't really put that risk out there to just absorb punishment like that from the best fighters in the weight class, because they're going to get through and they're going to knock you out. I mean, unfortunately for him, he just finally learned that lesson and against Eddie Alvarez. So hopefully he does tighten up that defense a little bit, because if he gets in a firefight with Poirier, I do trust his chin a little bit more, and I think he could do the damage and he could probably put Poirier out. So with all that said, I'm still picking Gaethje here. I just think it's a dog or pass situation. I mean, you could flip a coin with these guys, and anybody at plus money here, in my opinion, holds a little bit of value, because I think both these guys have the skill set and the path to victory that can be made here. So I think Gaethje is just going to be a little bit more relentless, and he's going to want this a little bit more than Poirier. Not that Poirier ain't going to want to win. I just think that his chin's not going to hold up as well, and I think Gaethje's going to catch that chin and put him out. So my pick is Gaethje is going to be inside the distance in what should be a fun fight to watch. It should be a war. But man, this is going to be a doozy for sure. I'm really looking forward to it. It's a great main event, and I'm hoping Gaethje gets back on track with a solid win over Poirier here.
Yeah, my biggest issue is Justin Gaethje just takes too much damage. The guy is an extremely exciting fighter, but I mean, he fights with reckless abandon and just doesn't seem to have any interest in protecting himself. I mean, yeah, he lands 9.5 strikes per minute, which is ridiculous, especially considering he's been in two fights against two top 10 lightweights at the time. But he gets hit over 10 strikes a minute. So, I mean, you're not going to have a lot of success when you're getting hit more often than you're hitting. I don't care how tough you are. I mean, Dustin Poirier hits hard. I think he hits harder than Eddie Alvarez. So if Justin Gaethje tries to just get into a slugfest, and if Poirier is keeping it more technical, then I think Poirier will win this fight. If Poirier devolves into a brawl, then I think Justin Gaethje will win this fight. I mean, it really just boils down to how this fight takes place. If it's one of those slobber knockers, I mean, that's right up Gaethje's alley. If it's a more technical battle, then it's going to come down to probably Gaethje's leg kicks versus Poirier's, you know, knockout power with his hands. Although Gaethje has knockout power with his hands too. The biggest difference between these two is Poirier does not have nearly as good of a chin. I mean, his chin is a little bit better in the lightweight division, but I mean, he still gets hurt. He got knocked out by Michael Johnson. He got hurt by Eddie Alvarez after he almost knocked out Eddie Alvarez. So Poirier is extremely dangerous, but he's also vulnerable. So, you know, that's what makes this fight so interesting though. I really feel like if Poirier can keep it technical, I think he can outstrike Gaethje, and I think that he could put Gaethje away because Gaethje just puts himself out there and is willing to take some shots to try to land his own. And if, Poirier hurts Gaethje and then gets over aggressive trying to put him away, he could still get knocked out. I mean, it could remind me of Ryan Bader against Glover Teixeira. You know, he rocked him and then let his guard down, stepped in way too aggressively, ate a shot, got put away. So stuff like that happens all the time, and that could definitely happen here. So Poirier's chin is clearly the biggest liability in this fight, but Gaethje's defense is liability number two. And if Gaethje just eats a ton of shots and, you know, you're just not going to be able to do that forever, and your chin is going to get worse. And we finally saw Gaethje, you know, we saw him get hurt repeatedly against Johnson. We finally saw him actually get stopped against Alvarez, and Poirier could stop him too. So I'm going to side with Dustin Poirier, but I mean, I would not be shocked one bit if Gaethje knocks Poirier out too. This is a fight that is almost certainly going to end by knockout at some point, but Poirier is going to be my pick. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC on Fox 29. Now, if we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to BetDSI. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.